Well, hello everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to another episode of the Music Video Land podcast, brought to you by your super good friends at imvdb.com, the Internet Music Video Database. It's a podcast where we talk about music videos, and we took last week off because of American Thanksgiving, just like cereal. We're very close to cereal podcast in the ratings, so we decided we would take a week off as well. My name is Adam. I do things on the IMVDB, and then with me, as usual, is protester Doug Klinger. How you doing, Doug?
Doing super good. I also do things for IMVDB. Isn't that weird?
Not really. We're on the same podcast. But here's another person who also does things for IMVDB and as well as Fringe Music Fix, North of the Wall, Mr. Adam Alexander. How are you, Adam?
I'm good. I'm ready to podcast.
Good. You've been, and we'll talk about this later, you've been binge listening to our old episodes. Like, this is episode 134, and there's a lot of them.
So I have, like, right now, I have podcasting blue balls. I'm just, like, ready.
We're cutting that shit out. That's gross. And so, continuing on our streak of awesome guests on the podcast, today we are joined by a directing duo who released a really fantastic music video this week, Drown by Marika Hackman. Brian Fairbairn and Carl Eccleston of directing duo Brian and Carl. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Hey.
And you guys are in London. We're recording this late. You guys are awesome for joining us in the wee hours of the morning. You guys this week have released a video for Marika Hackman called Drown, which is an amazing music video. I was wondering if you guys could kind of walk us through the concept and you know, where this originally came from.
Well, I guess it kind of restarted from the brief that we got from the label. And they wanted some... The brief was basically they wanted a dark, fucked up performance video. Their reference was the Chris Cunningham Portishead video for... So yeah, they wanted something kind of, it had to be underwater, and so it was, yeah, kind of trying to figure out a way of making that sustain, you know, a long, quite weird, slow song, without just being sort of self-indulgent
and wafty and
wanky. I don't know, we often try to kind of pitch things as kind of fucked up as we can, which doesn't do us many favors, but they were actually really receptive to it this time. We kind of wanted just to be violent and to have a bit of a through line. And
we should talk a little bit about the video concept, because it's, as you said, pretty fucked up. The video revolves around, it's all underwater, this person who is kind of drowning in slow motion, this girl.
The girl is actually Marika Hackman, who's
correct.
Drowning.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And at first I didn't notice. I'm actually not sure if it is initially kind of apparent, but you eventually notice maybe 30 or 40 seconds in that she's being held down. She is being drowned by these hands that we never see who they come from. It has this kind of nightmarish quality. If anybody has dreamed of being drowned, this is, may bring back some memories for you. Was that kind of a touch point for you guys, like the kind of dream aspect of it?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. I think it really goes to for us what the song's about. You know, it's actually kind of a love song. It's actually not such a dark song when you actually listen to the sentiment, and it's I want to drown in your mind. It's sort of the sort of self-destruction through love sort of thing. So we kind of wanted to tap into the self-destruction part of it. And so that's, yeah, kind of where that kind of hand popping up came from.
I mean, initially we wanted to do it in one take.
Yeah.
That was the pitch. And because it's shot, you know, at sort of double speed, you know, we thought, great, you know, she only has to hold her breath for 90 seconds. But I mean, you know, there were sort of practical, you know, considerations, and I think in the end, I'm glad that we decided to break it up into sort of a series of longer takes.
And the video kind of, you know, it's not just like her in a pool or something. You know, it's kind of like she's placed in this kind of abyss. You know, it's yeah. it's you can tell that she's floating. You see her breathing bubbles and that kind of thing, but you don't really get a feel for where she is, what kind of space that she's in. I wonder what you guys did to achieve that look.
We're a two-headed monster, really. But do you want to?
No, you go for it.
Well, I mean, basically, like, we were lucky enough to shoot actually in the tank where those sequences from that film Under the Skin were shot. I don't know if you guys have seen that film. The
Jonathan Glazer film with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. Have you guys seen that?
I have not. No, Doug.
I'm familiar with the film, but I have not seen it.
Well, check it out, because it is fucking nightmarish. But there are some really, really creepy underwater sequences in that. So we were lucky enough to shoot it in the same tank with actually some of the same crew that had worked on that film. And it's just a huge bloody tank.
Like, but I think we did kind of want to, like, exactly what you said, she's kind of in this sort of vacuum. And we're actually working with her to try to not let any breath out at all, because we wanted to try to kill visual cues that made it overtly underwater. She was really holding the bubbles in, and we wanted to try to save that for the end. So it was kind of this kind of vacuum that then maybe became something a bit more literal.
Yeah. Because there's like the opening shot where the shoe is just like floating up out of nowhere, and you kind of think, like, is this air? Is this space? Is this, you know? I think to some degree we kind of almost wanted it to look like it wasn't underwater.
Yeah, and then we did crush out a lot of watery details in the grade as well, to really isolate her.
And we should mention, for anybody who isn't familiar, Jonathan Glazer is kind of a legendary music video director himself. He directed Virtual Insanity for Jamiroquai in 96 and Karma Police for Radiohead, and has since gone on to do film work. But that's kind of amazing that you guys got some of the same crew to do that. Because that film was released a year ago and probably shot maybe 18 months or 2 years ago. How did you guys... Did you guys seek out some of the same crew, or did it just happen by chance?
No, it was just a coincidence, really. I think, you know, kind of working in London, they're kind of the go-to guys for underwater photography. You know, the second we kind of got paired up with a production company for the project, they went straight for Mark Silk, who has worked on, I think, basically any film shot in England with an underwater element. He did it. Like, he did Harry Potter. He's done a... I can't remember what the other one was. But our producer just kind of grabbed him, and then he brings his people along with it. So it was really just kind of led on from kind of the practicalities, and you know, first we were going to maybe do it in the pool and get the pool details, and just the way everything kind of worked out, it was pretty cool, because one of the big references in our original treatment was Under the Skin. So then to be able to show the, you know, the reference to the crew, and they just say, well, we did that, and...
Yeah, it was really great. We were like, can you, we kind of up to this look, and they're like, well, we were there, so we just light it like that, you know. And that was probably the thing. Every time we're on set, we've got these treatments, and like, how the fuck are we going to do this? But then, you know, they were there, and they're like, yeah, that's easy. That was just, you know, a couple of Kino flows or whatever, you know, whatever they had. So,
and technically, when working underwater, shooting, you know, the whole video shot underwater, do you kind of have to rely on those guys for elements of it, because they've been there before and done it before? And also, when shooting it, are you able to see what's being shot?
Yeah, you've got your monitor set up and everything like you would for any other shoot. It's more the communication that's difficult, because there's this sort of underwater PA system, and you've just got your microphone and your... You kind of don't feel like anyone can hear you, but you're relying on the kind of the nods in the camera, or the camera going from side to side.
But it's weird. It's like I kind of felt like I was on a talk show, like I was a talk show host for most of the day, because I had this microphone and you sort of speaking, you know, in these sort of dulcet tones into this bloody microphone, and this guy, you know, and, you know, the camera's kind of shaking to right or left or up and down, depending on whether you're saying yes or no or whatever. So it is kind of weird, because you're just effectively looking out across this empty tank. You can't even really see, you know, what's going on underwater visually, but you have the monitor. So, you know.
It's a very different... You don't necessarily feel quite as in control as you maybe would on a normal shoot.
Sometimes we hear from directors that, you know, putting an artist in kind of a situation where like a professional actor would have some sort of a challenge is a challenge in itself, because, you know, they're kind of artists first, and, you know, acting in music videos is kind of secondary to them. Did you have any issues with working with Marika Hackman? I'd imagine it's pretty technically challenging to kind of act underwater, and you know, pull off a performance underwater. How did she handle that?
She was pretty amazing. She didn't complain once. She was in that tank maybe 10 hours, wow, almost nonstop, being kind of thrown about and having blood injected up her nostrils. And
she, like, she really was being pulled by the hair back and forth. Yeah. But
by the end, she's not acting because it was...
Like, she was just pissed off.
The really Yankee shots we saved to the end. And the guy holding her down is actually her manager from the label. We were short of a hand, and the label rep was the only person kind of spare. So we had him the whole time doing it, and we told him to just kind of tear her up, and he did. And so a lot of her reactions are, yeah, I don't think it was a real stretch for her to kind of scream and look.
Well, it was strange too, because there's a violence to the video, but there's also a strange eroticism. So I'll just, you know, I'll leave that to, you know, leave that to your imaginations as to how they sort of dealt with that in the car on the way home, you know, sort of correcting her.
See, knowing that is a whole different, that gives a whole different layer to it. Now,
Because I was gonna ask about how you cast someone to be like the murder hands, and that's a really like interesting backstory. What was the conversation like asking the manager to play that role? Was that something that you asked him to do on set?
It was kind of like, you know, when you draw straws.
Not even. It was a case of, originally it was going to be, because when you shoot in the tank, there has to be two safety guys who are just these sort of trained scuba divers there. And originally it was going to be one of them, but then the health and safety people said absolutely not. So it was really just a case of we had one person there who...
Literally one person.
Yeah, who didn't have a very specific job.
We've done stuff with creeping hands before. Like, it has become slightly a little bit of a thing in like one or two of our previous videos, but
a normal hand creeper wasn't available.
Because I mean, that was more like choreography and dance based, yeah. And he's got really sort of strong, hairy forearms, but he had, you know, he wasn't available. So,
but it was just a case of, yeah, just whoever, the spare pair of hands. Sort of,
yeah, I was actually going to ask about the mystery hands, because I did notice that you use them in the Sarah Belkner video with you as well. Would you say that's kind of becoming like a trademark of yours, these hands, or was it more of a coincidence that you keep coming back to hands?
Well, I think it's a coincidence.
I think so. I mean, I think, I would say I hope not.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hard question.
No, I actually see them as very separate, kind of
in my
the
head,
hands
quite separate, yeah.
In this video and the last one. I think, you know, this one it was kind of really all about, like, we don't see it as a disembodied hand in the Marika one. We kind of see it as just sort of, you don't see who's doing it sort of thing.
Hmm.
Whereas with Sarah, it was very much meant to be kind of ghost hands or whatever.
Yeah, in the With You video, they're literally like hands that are cut off, you know, not
yeah,
cut off like bloody, but they're disembodied, like literally.
Yeah, we were painted out sort of the where you could see his hands and I mean his head and his shoulders and
but he's also quite a, like, in some ways a I won't say diminutive Irish man, but he's not the biggest Irish man around, and he was actually quite well hidden behind her on the bed a lot of the time, and you just couldn't actually see where he was. Yeah. So some painting out and some just, you know, really well hidden Irish man.
Yeah.
That helps when you've got, you don't have to paint as much out. That helps to have a small Irish man around.
I was reading an interview with Marika where she mentioned the visual artist Bill Viola as being an inspiration for the video. And I had to Google his work, of course, but there's obviously some big similarities between his work and the video. I'm just wondering, is that a reference point that you guys brought to the mix, or was it more her? Or
no, that was in our original treatment. Yeah, we were looking at a lot of Bill Viola and Under the Skin, but I actually think Under the Skin looked at Bill Viola as well, because it's kind of impossible not to see the similarities there. But yeah, no, that was something we brought in the treatment. We were also looking at Let the Right One In, the original, the Swedish film, the kind of the climax in the pool at the end. We really liked how they did that.
But I think Bill Viola was a kind of a visual reference primarily initially, but then we do have that kind of sort of image of her, you know, she sort of sinks away from the hand and then kind of rises back up again. And in Bill Viola's videos, there's a lot of like people sinking and then rising because there's all this stuff about sort of transfiguration and, you know, resurrection and this sort of quasi-religious sort of thing.
He wasn't, so when we were making, I wasn't really thinking about his stuff very much.
Because I think, I mean, his stuff is kind of, I don't know, it's
very much abstract.
It's more abstract. This is actually kind of quite visceral in a way, I think.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I can definitely see the difference there because there is dreamlike qualities to it, but, or nightmare-like qualities to it, but it is very real. I mean, those hands are, like you said, kind of like jerking her around, and those reactions are, you know, very, very real, which is why, you know, I'm wondering if when you pitch a video like that, that kind of relies so heavily on the acting of the star. Do you guys ever get, not nervous, but, you know, kind of wonder if that, you know, artist or singer can pull that off? Because there's a lot of kind of, you know, technical and kind of acting pressure to put someone under.
I think we looked at a lot of her last videos and kind of looked at how she kind of performs and comes across in them, and kind of, you know, maybe kind of pitch something that would fit inside what we already seen. And we kind of wanted her to be quite reactive, I think, to a lot of it. I don't think it was too much of a stretch. We didn't set out to do anything that would be kind of, that would involve
too much acting. But you know, the thing is, like, cause she's underwater. So, you know, by the end of that sort of 40-second take or whatever it is, that's like a minute and a half into the video, I mean, you know, she kind of wants to take a breath, and you can kind of see that. And, you know, a lot of those takes where she's like thrashing about, she's already been underwater for 20 or 30 seconds and she's exhausted. So it's just kind of embodying what's happening. It's not even sort of acting necessarily. I mean, I don't know if I'd throw her into a full on kind of narrative video, and, you know, yeah, she was kind of drowning a little bit.
Yeah.
Basically.
If you're going to film someone drowning, why not drown them for real?
Well, that was kind of the thinking. We looked
at videos of that, actually, didn't we? Like people drowning, like there's all these videos on YouTube, and like, it's a bit distressing, but there's this idea that people are really kind of placid when they drown, and it's really difficult to spot drowning behaviors because people just like, they go into this almost like, paralyzed kind of state. So yeah, we did our research, but
she didn't actually she didn't really need a whole lot of direction. It was more, you know, the direction we ended up giving her was more sort of technical in terms of like when to look at the camera and, you know, when not to, and, you know, how to respond to maybe the kind of the fingers going in her mouth sort of thing. But
we were just on the microphone saying more erotic. Yeah.
But no, I mean, she took what direction we gave very well, but she didn't actually sort of need a whole lot of pushing, performance wise.
Well, she did. She gave lots of
physical pushing. But
yeah. I'm curious what you guys were going for with the styling, her styling in the video. The video, like you mentioned, starts with kind of like a Converse shoe kind of floating across, and she's in kind of like more kind of casual clothes, I would describe it as. What was behind that decision?
We kind of wanted to look like she'd just been kind of plucked up off the street and submerged. We thought it would kind of add to the kind of, not the absurdity, but just the casual kind of horror of it. Like, I don't know, I think there's a temptation when you do underwater stuff to kind of put women in the most flowing sort
horrible.
Of
flowy white
sort of thing you can
chiffon,
and we kind of, yeah, again, I guess it kind of goes back to the underwater being a bit more beside the point,
so
we were talking about earlier.
So I think in a way the ordinary heightens the absurd.
Not so much the absurd, but more the kind of the violence of it. We just didn't want to look like she was meant to be there, sort of thing.
Yeah, sure. You're right. When you mentioned that, my mind flashed back to about 15 videos that I've seen of somebody in, you know, underwater drowning, and they're like in a giant Victorian era dress that just has, you know, as many things floating around as possible. I think that would have definitely kind of detracted from the effect here, because she's in street clothes, and it looks like she's not supposed to be there, which is really important, I think, to the overall effect.
Yeah, a flowing dress makes it feel like too much like a music video almost, and out of place, you know, like that. It takes you out of it, and you're like, "Oh, I'm watching a beautiful lady underwater."
Having her styled that way, which actually reminds me even more so of what you mentioned was the reference point, the Only You video. I remember the running shoes were really prominently placed in that video as well, so it kind of ties it together nicely into that one too.
Something
not related to the video, but we wanted to ask is, so you guys are a directing duo, Brian plus Carl, and I was wondering, do you guys usually keep the plus nomenclature in there, or do you usually go by Brian and Carl?
We go Brian and Carl. I think this is on our website, with Brian plus Carl.
Let's just check our website and have a look. Yeah.
Because, I think that was sort of,
because you share that with that aspect with the American directing duo Lamar plus Nick, but then they're very particular. I don't know if you've heard of them or seen their work. They're very particular about the plus being in between their name.
Oh, really? No, I think we just had a font for the website, and the plus was better than the and. You know, I think it's actually the same font. I'm looking at the.
That's why it looks so
good. Oh, shit.
Oh, no. You guys.
Edit that out.
Yeah, why'd you bring that up, Adam? I'm curious how, because you guys are credited also as editing the video together, and I'm curious kind of how that breaks down, how you guys are able to kind of edit a project together.
We sort of do it in sweeps in a way. It's, you know, like...
I think we kind of look at what we've got together first, and then...
Yeah. I mean, Brian's really great at laying down the big, sort of the bones and the sort of the skeleton of the video, and then sometimes I'll sweep through and do some of the detail, and we go back and edit each other's work. So it's kind of like...
If there's something kind of more rapid cut, that's probably Carl, whereas the longest stuff is usually me.
We're always interested in talking to music video directing duos, because I think it's something that's kind of unique to the art form. I mean, there are a few like film directing duos, but I think some of the best work oftentimes in music video is done by duos. How did you guys kind of agree to be a duo? Was it just something, a mutual admiration of your work, or some sort of circumstances like that?
No, we started together. We're actually like a couple in real life, just to add to the kind of pressure, I guess. and about a year after we met, we just sort of on a whim, because Carl's more kind of a writer, and like he'd been working on his novel for a million years, and I kind of always did more sort of theater and design stuff. About a year after we met, we just on a whim made a short film that went viral. And then off the back of that, we made that short film Squirrel, and that went viral. Off the back of that, kind of Carl had a musician friend. We made a video for her, and then her singing teacher, who's actually Sarah Belkner from the last video, needed a music video. And this is all in Sydney as well. So we made a bunch of independent music videos, and then a year ago moved to London and got repped, and just been kind of pitching and making stuff since. So it's just kind of it was an organic thing.
It was a natural kind of progression. Yeah. I mean, I never thought I would be directing music videos in London, but here we are.
I think you guys may be the only music, like, couple music video directing duo other than Bangs, I think. Doug, am I correct?
No, you're thinking of Watt.
I'm thinking of Watts. Sorry, never mind. Sorry, Bangs. But that's really interesting.
We know another one. Actually,
we know another one. There's
Matthew and Fran. Do you know those guys? They're also London based. What have they done? They did an awesome promo for
Ross Chimes. Turn Me Out.
But, probably seen it. Anna Calvi.
Oh, yeah. I think I've seen that
beautiful promo they did for Anna Calvi.
They did an awesome Dan Kroll one.
So yeah, we've kind of, but we should milk that a bit more, I think.
Yeah, just like all the time, just like make sure it's like, look, you gotta say it when you write about this, just make sure to mention it so people think it's cool.
Yeah, or awful, depending.
So Doug and Adam and everybody, we took a week off for Thanksgiving break. You guys do not have Thanksgiving in the UK, am I correct in that?
No, but we got Black Friday this year, which was
nice.
Oh, so I heard about that. Yeah, it's moved over. Congratulations.
Yeah, people in hospital.
Was it actually black? Like bad things happened?
Yeah, like bad things. It was mental.
Yeah, that's we're way used to that. How was that? How and in Canada, did that also happen in Canada, Adam Alexander?
Yes.
It did. In terms of Black Friday was a thing, and you also didn't have Thanksgiving.
Not then. Ours was a Canadian thing.
You have a different one. Okay.
But we there's a lot of amazing music videos that happened and were released in the last 2 weeks. We just talked about one, Drowned by
Black Friday. Actually.
What?
What are you talking about?
Right to the Mr. Wazzo video. Ham.
Okay, we can do that.
We're always looking for transitions here, and why not then? Why not that one? So yeah, let's start off with we're gonna talk about a few music videos that came out in the last 2 weeks because it's been a really interesting past few weeks for some pretty amazing music videos. And the first one, as Adam has rightly pointed out, has to do with maybe the saddest Black Friday of all, and that is a song called "Ham" by an artist that you may or may not have heard of, Mr. Oizo, but a director that if you've listened to this podcast before, you probably have definitely heard of, Eric Wareheim of Tim and Eric, and starring one of my favorite actors for all of the crazy shit he does, that is Mr. John C. Reilly. Doug, why don't you, because you staff picked this video, why don't you take us through this one?
So this video was released on Black Friday, like you mentioned, and it kind of follows a similar line that Black Friday follows. So it starts with John C. Reilly just as like the ugliest, fattest person, an angry person in the world. And he's on a scooter.
A large small person, or a son.
He's credited as son, so it's which is an interesting. I mean, in an Eric Wareheim world, who knows?
Why and not? So, yeah.
Like in real life, he's probably an adult, but in terms of what he is in this video, it's kind of obscured. Anyway, John C. Reilly. It's important to mention that in his scooter, he has chips in the basket, and he's pouring hot sauce on them and eating them. And so as he is rolling down the street, throwing burritos at ladies and stuff, he has a magazine, an advertisement magazine, that indicates that there's a toy on sale that he needs, and he seems very excited about that. So he rushes over to the toy store, to the store, which has this toy among everything. It's essentially like what a Walmart would be in an Eric Wareheim video. It's got all of the things, but it's the shittiest place in the world. So he goes to this place, and everyone there is equally as disgusting as him. And a fight breaks out, similar to what you may see at a Black Friday, between three people for the final toy. And instead of kind of figuring out who should get it in a civil way, they all pull out guns and shoot each other. And that's the video. So that was fun to describe. That's what happens in this video, and it's very hilarious and also disturbing.
I just want to add a couple things. The toy is actually sort of the trademark character for Mr. Wazzo, He's actually seen in one of their other videos for actually a song that everyone's heard, Flat Beat. It was like huge in the 90s and played on like dance mix CDs and stuff. So yeah, that's actually the Mr. Wazzo character.
Wazzo.
Yeah, it's actually Wazzo. It's which is bird in French. And I don't know if he's supposed to be a bird. He doesn't seem to have wings or anything, but it's definitely a derivative version of Wazzo in French.
What, did you guys like this video?
Loved it.
I mean, the first time we tried to watch it, we were eating. it got turned off pretty fast.
It's because we watch music videos at breakfast. It's like, instead of reading the newspaper, we sit down and we watch it. And I was like, fuck, we're not watching this right now.
We thought it was...
I thought it was insane. Like, I loved the way, like, you know, he's trying to speed up and he's putting more, like, hot sauce on his chips as he's, like, scooting to the shop. And, you know, the fact that, you know, they're these two, like, ugly, almost sort of, like, zombie-like. It's they're infested with something.
But then I love the reveal that it's not just them, but that's actually kind of the world.
That's genius.
The woman outside turns around and it's like, oh, fuck, what is this nightmare?
Yeah, it's just like horrible looking people, just like made to look like zombies is a great, because if you look at the thumbnail from the video, it's just John C. Reilly looking dead into the camera, like it easily could be from like The Walking Dead or something, like very easily could be his character. And what I love about kind of Tim and Eric stuff in general, but you get a lot of it in Eric Wareham's music videos, is he's able to like use lowest common denominator, like that's the vessel in which he like makes a much deeper statement. And some videos the statement is a little bit more subdued. This one's kind of very obvious, the statement that they're trying to make, but they make it really well with like really like low, like just gross stuff and violence and just like completely insanity. They're able to make, he's able to make a larger point with this video. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it kind of makes you think of his kind of what you're saying, his video for Wishes, the beach house, and it's a really moving, beautiful cinematic video. But when you actually look at the detail, it's like, what the fuck is this kind of, you know, bizarro world sports field with Laura Palmer's dad lip syncing female song, but for some reason it kind of just feels like a powerful, moving, very earnest sort of experience.
And let's give it up for John C. Reilly, who I believe is either nominated or has won an Oscar.
For Chicago,
he was Roxy Hart's husband in Chicago. Don't ask me.
There's definitely some synergy there with John C. Reilly and Tim and Eric, obviously.
Yeah, because he is
checking out with Dr. Steve Brule. Probably the greatest character invented in my lifetime.
And he totally he sells this unbelievably in this. I feel like I can't really picture anybody else in this role. Like you guys mentioned, the standing up and you know, hot saucing his chips as he is kind of speeding up. At that point, you really don't know where the thing is going.
Right. It could go anywhere.
It really could go anywhere. Especially the fact that his quote-unquote somebody, the little person that is credited as his son, is on sort of like it's not like a caboose that is normal. It is like a giant raised...
It's got a microwave.
Yeah, it is absolutely ridiculous.
This world, it's crazy. One thing we should mention... this music video was shot by Andrew Wheeler, who I believe is going to be our guest next week, unless we take a week to do the best of the year. He's coming on soon, and we'll talk about this video with Andrew soon. And
if you listen, Andrew, we're coming for you.
Wheels. You may know him as Wheels.
Another...
Just real quick, I want to go around the room. Who has eaten chips with hot sauce on it? I'm a no.
Yeah, I have.
Just direct chip at... Hot sauce and chips.
Yes.
No, like, nope.
Not me. Farrell is a yes. Man, we're saving that conversation for another time. Stay tuned for part two of Adam Has Eaten Chips with Hot Sauce.
Another there are a few videos on the list of directed by people who have been on the podcast. We always like to harp on that, so why don't we go over to one of those. Cool. One of them is for Run the Jewels, Oh My Darling, Don't Cry, which is directed by Timothy Cicenti, who's been on this podcast. Oh, it was a while ago. I'll link to the episode in the show notes. This is the rap duo, LP and Killer Mike, known as Run the Jewels. And this has the thing that amuses me so much about this video is the title, "Oh My Darling," and in parentheses, "Don't Cry." In the video, LP says that he would like, you know, the people that are hating on him to run backwards through a field of dicks. So the title of the song and the lyrics don't really match up, but this is a very Timmy's
interesting observation.
What's that?
I said it's an interesting observation. I think that's a great explanation of what Run the Jewels are. Just that right there. This title versus those lyrics.
And this video is not like, it's not a narrative video. It's a very stylized video. It's got LP and Killer Mike performing in it. It's very, very kind of sensory overload, which is, you know, Timothy Cicenti is a very visual, you know, visual graphic guy. And I thought this video was really successful, though. The last video, you know, he's directed a few videos for LP, including, what's it called, Doug?
He's done a few, the Full Retard, Stay Down, and then he also did 36-inch Chain for Run the Jewels last year. This is now his fourth collaboration with LP. But the one you're thinking of, Adam, that is your favorite. That's the Full Retard, which features Mr. Killums, which is a little rat puppet that murders people. We digress a little bit. We should talk a little bit about Oh My Darling, Don't Cry. It's what I found is interesting. I think it's a great video. I think you have to do performance stuff like this with Run the Jewels. I feel like they have just so much energy, even just listening to them. Like, it's a very like energetic song, and you kind of have to show that with an artist like this. And I think what Timothy does in addition to that is pretty unique for a hip hop video. You know, I don't think you see something styled like this very often in hip hop. I think it's pretty unique, the way the visual effects are made, done, and that kind of thing. I think it's you see it in other types of music videos, but not necessarily in hip hop videos. I think it's pretty sweet. And that's cool. The one more thing I wanted to talk about this video, it's very interesting. LP and Killer Mike have been engaging people on Twitter who have been voicing their opinions that they don't like the fact that there is a naked woman in this music video. Oh. And like giving them a hard time about it. And they've been pretty like, you know, they've been fighting back with that, with their thoughts on that. And I think naked women is not something that's new in a hip hop video, but I think it's also done in a way that you don't necessarily see very frequently. Timothy Cicenti does like this type of thing, projecting things on, you know, kind of different silhouettes frequently. It even comes up in his Fall in Love video for Fantagram. There are similar images. So
wait, I don't understand. People are mad that there's like a nude woman for like a split second with like
in a rap,
projected all over it.
Yeah, people, I don't know how many people are doing this, but they're doing that thing on Twitter where they're like, you know, including the like they're publicly talking with these people, you know, putting the period before the at mention and stuff. Okay. So, you know, it's something that you see just by following these guys on Twitter. So it is something that they're kind of being vocal about. Like, maybe they knew they would have to address this, and so they wanted to like let their thoughts be known. I just thought it was really interesting that they're kind of like taking this stuff on head on. I mean, Run the Jewels are pretty hot right now, and people are paying attention to what they're saying. And it's Killer Mike is you know, frequently on the news, talking about a lot of, violence in America, police brutality. People are kind of paying attention to what these guys are saying right now, and it's just interesting that they're talking about that stuff right now.
It's kind of funny to hear that, and the thing that struck us watching this video was that it very much feels like, well, the naked women bits very much feel like the early Bond title themes, like the sort of From Russia with Love era Goldfinger projections on naked women, as opposed to sort of a gratuitous sort of rap video kind of thing.
I mean, I think it's
I think there's actually quite a beauty to the to the kind of silhouettes and stuff of the.
But women. I mean, it's also to me, it's also classic objectification of women's bodies. But that's nothing new, and I don't think this video transgresses that that trope in a particularly offensive way. I mean, the other thing we noticed too about it, well, Brian picked up on it, was maybe the use of slit scan in some of those kind of effects. I don't know if you guys picked up on that too, but
what is what slit scan?
Slit scan.
It's the super old. We might be wrong, but it looks like it's to us a super old technique. That's how Kubrick did the big Stargate or whatever it is sequence at the end of Space Odyssey. But it's a sort of dividing the image up, so you're kind of registering time as opposed to visuals. All this stuff with them looking really warped.
It's basically like you sort of almost it's sort of a time staggered. Time is sort of staggered within the image, and that's how you get those kind of wavy effects, kind of like horizontally, or you can sort of do it vertically.
That's
interesting you mentioned that, because that's something I noticed in another video that's on our list, Gary Clark Jr.'s When My Train Pulls In. I'm not sure if that's the same, or maybe is it very pronounced? Can you, like, if you're looking at an image, you can tell that it's warped?
It's like the stuff with the two guys kind of rotating.
You talk those really like the really strong visual effects. There's like two really strong visual effects. There's one where like the image kind of rotates around the screen, but kind of in a circle. But then you're talking about the one where they're like they're rotating and their arms are like stretching out and becoming disoriented and stuff.
Yeah, and there's ones where they kind of look generally kind of just wibbly.
Right.
But I'd be curious to know if that's what he did, because it's sort of a technique we've looked at a lot. And it's, cool to see it done well.
Knowing Timothy Susenti, I would feel that is highly likely that is the effect. Because he's done a lot of really amazing, he would definitely know what slit scan is and how to use it. He's done a lot of pretty amazing, practical visual effects like that. I'm just kind of amazed that this is a controversy at all. I guess I feel like the part of it is the fact that Killer Mike, as Doug said, is on American 24-hour cable news a lot as a commentator. And in fact, and especially considering the recent events in U.S. news, his little clips of him on different news shows has floated around a lot.
And he's been a very eloquent commentator.
He's been fantastic. So I think it kind of attracts. When I saw nude women in this, there was zero things in my brain that even registered. Oh no, there's a naked lady in here. It just seemed to kind of fit perfectly with the whole Run the Jewels ethos and the
fact,
If you look
at the Twitter a little bit, I might have mischaracterized it a little bit. So what was maybe happening is people were saying stuff and he was kind of addressing that and kind of giving his thoughts, and then more fans were coming in and kind of being aggressive towards like the people who were making those initial statements and being like, why is my favorite rapper sounding like a feminist right now, and like being angry like that, and then like that became the larger issue. It's worth taking a walk down the old LP Twitter account and seeing for yourselves. And that is The Real LP on Twitter. Let's move on to some more stuff.
One of those things that we should move on to is a video directed by another friend of the podcast, and that is Charlie XCX Breaking Up, directed by a good bud's brother, if we're talking about styles, brother definitely has one of the most defined styles out there, I think. And this is a video that has been, I don't know how much we can say, Doug, but it has been kind of
waiting
to go out for a long time. This video has been done for a while.
Seven months, Lyndon. So I think we could say that because they've been talking about it publicly.
Okay.
On their Twitters. We're talking a lot about people's tweets. But yeah, breaking up Charlie XCX. Yeah, it's been done for a while. This video was made before Charlie XCX was on, like before Fancy came out. And so I think, you know, when an artist suddenly like rockets up to being super famous, which is kind of what happened to Charlie XCX after Fancy, the Iggy Azalea song, you know, things change. And so this video kind of, you know, got moved around a little bit, I think is a way to describe it. But I think we should talk about this video. Adam Alexander, I think, should tell us what happens in this video.
Yeah, sure. I was just going to toss in one little fact, too, that I read today that Fancy was the most viewed video of this year. So just a kind of testament to how much Charlie has blown up this year.
We will we'll give you those numbers specifically soon. So whatever that source you're quoting, don't trust it.
Yeah, so anyway, this video is, as Adam mentioned, kind of fits into the 80s, 90s kind of cult style that we often see in a brother video. And it has sort of a little bit of a narrative bit to it. At least at first, the setup is that Charlie's dating a dude and he's kind of an asshole and they break up. And then her friends, they kind of go to a bowling alley and the ex-boyfriend is kind of tied up and gagged, and then they just kind of like be badass and cute all around his tied and gagged body. And then one thing I really liked was like the videos kind of just them at the bowling alley, but then they kind of splice in these really cool like animated little shots that very highly stylized and stuff, and it's all cut together very, very well, and it's a cool, fun video. I like it.
This I think it's really important to look at this and remember this is before Fancy, because this is like a very different Charlie XCX sound. This is more of her like,
the song is newer though.
The song actually is newer. I mean,
this song obviously has been around over 7 months.
Yeah.
But like it's definitely less poppy than what the other stuff. I mean, it's pretty poppy too, actually. I think all of the stuff that's come, like her last album was a lot different than what's coming out. I still think the stuff she's doing now is great. It's a different sound.
This sounds significantly different than Boom Clap or Break the Rules in terms of how poppy it is. This is a little more grungier, I would say. And she's, you know, the Break the Rules is directed by Mark Klasfeld, who's a great director, but a very poppy director. So this is definitely a different direction for her. I know that Charlie XCX really loves the kind of brother aesthetic, and she's very into that. So this is why I really wanted to see this video, because I think it was an interesting merging of, you know, artist, you know, interest in a style and director as well. So good job, brother.
Yeah. You mentioned she loves her style because the videos that she did prior to all the ones from her new album all have like a very like Tumblr feel to them, like, and which is a lot closer to what Brother is doing. Not that Brother has our like Tumblr stuff, but it's you know, a Mark Klasfeld video is like a very specific type of video, and that's just like super glossy, you know, big pop video. It's interesting because listening to Adam describe the video, and I think he did a great job, Adam, but you know, just on the surface, if you just like describe what happens in this video versus what happens just, you know, describing what the narrative is in the Break the Rules video, they're not too far apart. She basically like breaks up with her boyfriend and then goes bowling. That's what the narrative of breaking up is. But, you know, what is the difference between the videos, obviously, is the person who made them in the style of that director. And I kind of favor this kind of style, and it's in grungy is really interesting, Adam, that you use that term too, because that is kind of the style of her performance in this video. She's got like a full band and a lot of drum sets and feels very grungy.
just to clarify, I found just a little bit more about Fancy there from USA Today. So it was actually Vivo's most viewed video of the year.
That's the stat that I believe now.
380 million for views.
Congrats.
Was Fancy as big in the UK as it was here?
Yeah, oh my God, it's everywhere. It's been interesting seeing, because we just moved here from Sydney, and obviously Iggy Azalea is Australian, but didn't at all kind of have a career in Australia. I think she moved stateside pretty much straight away, but seeing it kind of, I don't know, Australia trying to kind of claim her for their own sort of thing, which I don't know how much connection she feels with it, but she just won a bunch of arias like 2 weeks ago, which is the big kind of Grammys of Australia, and she didn't show up or anything, but there was this whole thing about, well, why should she? Because, you know, the Australian industry did nothing for her.
Well, it's because she just moved to the States straight away, because that's where, you know, that's where her music would... Anyway.
I think that, yeah, that's the scene she...
We're not going to have a domestic on it.
It's like...
Australian, and he's not. So this shit comes
along. I've found that the kind of like around the same time rise of Iggy Azalea from Australia and Lorde from New Zealand is interesting, because she's very much like of New Zealand and... you know, didn't have a career there, but like it's constantly talking about New Zealand. And you know, the video for Lorde was directed by Joel Kafali, who's from New Zealand, and she keeps a lot of roots there. So I don't know where I'm going with that.
Just roots. A suburb in Auckland.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, I guess Lorde's music was rooted in kind of like, I mean, it talks about her experiences as a teenager growing up in an unremarkable place, whereas I think Iggy Azalea's music is tapping into a kind of a tradition that exists exists in the US, and she's just sort of jumped straight into that. But I don't know, I mean, I think Kiwis also are a bit kind of, you know, they're a bit tenacious and hold on to their root a wee bit more.
I think everyone's very proud of Lorde.
Yeah, she's going to be a national treasure, I think. It's along with Lord of the Rings. And...
Yeah. I hear we had Joel Kafali record some director commentaries for us. And while he did that, I was talking to him, and he mentioned that just the fact he directed the most recent Katy Perry This Is How You Do music video. And he mentioned that like he made the newspaper in New Zealand just because he directed that video. And so I think that they do get pretty prideful in their in the folks based on the knowledge that we got from Joel Kafali. So
and
I got what's that?
Speaking of and also Flight of the Conchords. And speaking of kind of tales of you know, places where you grew up, I think that's a good lead into the When My Train Pulls In video by Gary Clark Jr., directed by Carmela Michaela. A narrative video. I think the Charlie XCX video is relatively a narrative, but this is a kind of a deep narrative video. This kind of follows I'm going to explain it, but this video confused me, although I liked it.
Well, it's two narratives.
Yeah, that's right. It's two narratives. It's a girl who is a senior in high school, I assume. You know, a black family, a father and his son and his wife.
Brother. It's two brothers.
Okay.
Okay, we'll start this over. Sorry, I think I should describe it because I had Carmela record a commentary yesterday, and so I got to hear what it's about. And
okay, go ahead.
So there's no speculation needed. So yes, it's two kind of stories that are running alongside of each other. One of them, like you mentioned, is of a female high school senior who is a cheerleader. She seems to, you know, seems to be doing all of the right things, but she is distracted by what appears to be an older boyfriend. And then a second narrative that kind of runs alongside, they cut between them, is of two brothers who live with like a mom who seems kind of out of it. She's out of it. You don't really see her taking any drugs or anything like that, but it's kind of implied that she's probably like a drug user. And this brother has he stepped in and kind of taken responsibility to raise his younger brother. and then you kind of, those two narratives play out. And what I really liked about this video is these aren't necessarily like stories that are super new and unique. Like these aren't characters that are super new and unique, but I feel like where they went was very satisfying to me. Like, I think it was a really interesting, like, there's like a more obvious cliche place that these characters could go, and I think that where they ultimately lead seems a little bit more real to me, and that's really, it was more satisfying. It felt like a more natural ending.
I just, the scene that sticks out of my mind from this video is when she's in the college counseling office or whatever waiting, and she's got like a book that says freshman year in college or something like that, and her boyfriend like raps on the glass and she dumps the books in the trash.
Right.
She didn't need to dump them in the trash.
No, she didn't. It was very poor decision making. I think that goes to the fact that, you know, at that age, that's kind of what they're setting up this character as, like someone who has like opportunities but is like literally like dumping them so she can like have sex with her boyfriend in the car, and
is
then
she
get
pregnant
like,
by the end of the video. Was that what Carmella was going for?
She has some bruising on her side.
It was just like a particularly like uncomfortable sexual experience in like a gross truck, and then she was just like feeling regret after that, and in kind of potentially questioning her questionable decisions.
And then Carmella threw in the dad. This is one of my favorite, not favorite, but a music video character that we see relatively frequently, and it's the dad who's like kind of like hitting on his teenage daughter.
Yeah, right.
I can't name any videos, but I feel like that's like when I saw him, I was like, oh, there's that guy again. He's always hitting on his teenage daughter.
Maybe it's a stepdad. I guess that's not completely clear, but I also thought that it was her dad. But what I was kind of getting at before, like, I feel like in like a more obvious music video that these, like,
they would have won the lottery or something.
Oh, no, I think it would have gone like in the like the opposite direction. Like, this brother who seems like a great guy, like being responsible for his brother, and also like, even though his mom is kind of like checked out, he's still like helping her out too. He doesn't seem to be like angry at his mom, and like, I feel like in a more cliche music video, he would like go break the law or something.
Yeah, he's a good brother. He hangs in there.
It's a really good way to kind of add a narrative to a music video, given that they're kind of short in length, because it doesn't really have like a definitive like story arc to it. It's more like just like a glimpse into these two lives. Like, it doesn't really have like a big ending and that kind of a thing. It's more like kind of just like you're looking in at their lives. I like that about it.
And the older brother is played by Keith Stanfield, who you may know from the film Short Term 12. Or maybe you don't know him from that.
Well, either
way. No, we don't.
Oh, you guys don't. I was talking to just like the straw man listener that, that I reference. What did you guys think about this video though?
We don't. Kind of what you were just saying, Adam, about how we just kind of, it's like this sort of miniature portrait of these two separate people kind of on the cusp of something, but you know, never kind of resolves it. It just kind of shows us two situations and hints at maybe what the outcomes could be on either end, or, you know, without kind of shoehorning in any kind of resolution that it doesn't want to have.
And the fact that, you know, you have this expectation that maybe those two sort of narratives are going to kind of collide, but
yeah,
you know, but they don't. And I think there is a kind of a beauty in the sort of the separateness of that. I think that's
parallel.
Yeah, I think
thematic
that's,
sort of.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, the cinematography. That's what kind of what we couldn't get over.
Yes, shot by Steve Annis, who's kind of like a legend.
Yeah, we were just watching his Brian Ferry video earlier today.
The Eve McArdle video, like, that's just beautifully shot.
Yeah, he's like our new favorite DP. We're just sort of looking through all this stuff.
Let's look him up.
Yeah, no, he's
for Loop de Lee.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Loop de Lee, yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful video.
see if we chatted with for the blog. We should do that. We can do that, right? Mention that.
We can. And this kind of goes back to a conversation that we or a topic that we used to go over on the podcast a lot or and on the blog as well. This idea that music videos are really the only medium that you can kind of do something like this, like show just a piece and not really have any pressure or obligation to do a narrative arc. I think it's a little different in short films where I think you're, if not a full kind of classic narrative arc, are expected to have some sort of, you know, setup and some sort of resolution. And music videos are so freeform that you can do something like that. You can just say, here are these people and, you know, we're going to tell you a little bit about them. But we're not going to kind of interweave these stories. You know, we don't even guarantee that there's some sort of overarching, you know, thread between them or something you can take away from them. This is just a glimpse of that. And I think it's kind of the beauty of the simplicity of, like, oh, how open-ended music videos are. You can do something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So another video on the list, and you know, we're running the gamut of, like, narrative videos, really stylistic videos, and we're going into the territory of the super stylized video and kind of conceptual video with How'd You Like It by Rosie Lowe, directed by Us, who's as a group that we haven't discussed on the podcast too much, another directing duo, but they've directed some pretty fantastic music videos. I Will Never Change by Benga is one that comes to mind. This video, like I said, very conceptual. Takes place in a lot of, like, abandoned spaces, and a lot of nudity. It's one of those videos where there's a lot of kind of tracking shots of kind of tableaus. And in the, you know, in the video, you can see one of the main, you know, visual concepts of the video is these two nude people tied together by these very, like, weird, they're not string, they're kind of like digital string. It's very odd.
Actually, I just want to add something to that. I thought they were a video effect, but I read an interview with Us, and they said that it's actually something called reflective yarn. So it is actually
yarn.
Yeah, it's like a tangible. I'm sure there's some VFX, like when they've got her suspended, they've obviously done some editing there, but apparently the yarn is actually a thing.
So there's a practical effect. That's pretty, that makes it cooler.
I know. Wow, okay. Well, I'm going to include a link to Amazon where you can buy some reflective yarn if you want. Cool. Brian and Carl, have you guys ever used reflective yarn in your videos?
No, we were trying to figure out what it was, if it was a sort of special effect or some kind of grading thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun effect, though. It definitely works.
Yeah.
But we kind of had it on authority because you guys will be interested in this. So when you included this in the list of videos, we were like, what? Because we only saw this video today. And the old, well, I shouldn't say old, but the older woman in the video is actually our landlady.
Your landlady from what? From when?
This house we live in, London.
We live with Mary, who's the naked lady at about 2 minutes. 2 minutes into the video, 2:15.
So are you gonna mention it there?
She was showing us this earlier today.
She showed you guys before we asked you to watch it.
Yeah, it just came out, like, yesterday or something.
But, she does this independently. Like, she's a retired teacher, and she's a bit of an actor, and she's always running off. And I tell you what, like, the majority of her videos, she comes home, she's like, yeah, I was naked, or, yeah, you know, I kissed this guy with tattoos, and he's got tattoos on his dick. And there was that video.
Yeah, I'm trying to find one. She did a really great video earlier this year.
So she comes home with all these crazy stories. Katie Cowell. But, you know, and I was just like, oh, yeah, thanks, Mary. I wasn't necessarily going to watch it, but... But then, yeah, and there she was. And then I think, like, the camera is kind of floating down. I'm like, oh, are we going to see the nipples? Are we going to see the nipples? I'm not sure. You know what? I'm not sure if we do. And I don't think I'm going to revisit it to see whether you... But anyway.
Yeah, so. If you look up the video for Ellie Ingram, All Caught Up by AJ Colombe, Mary's in that as well. If you want to kind of look through Mary's
filmography. She's, like, necking off with some guy.
She's kind of half naked in that one as well.
We're going to credit her on both of these videos. She'll have an IMDb page Yeah. And we will link to that in the show notes.
So she's like telling you like, oh, I do acting and stuff. And you're thinking like community theater or something like that. And then she's, wow.
Well,
okay.
It's sort of G music videos. And
yeah. I think you need to get her in a music video.
We did a low budget thing with her sort of last year, but it's not
coke,
really.
But
yeah, she was snorting really coke, but it's not really on our showreel anymore. you know, she's sort of a belly dancing, tap dancing, ballet dancing,
well,
actress,
coke snorting, string wearing
on camera.
Actually, it was interesting because she was talking about the fact that they offered. They said, "You know what they asked her? They said, you will be naked for this. Do you have a G-string?' I mean, what kind of question?" Like, who asks a 67-year-old if they have a G-string? She's like, no, I don't have a G-string.
You just provide the G-string at that point. I think you guys win craziest coincidence of the video list because
that definitely wins. You'll get your trophy in the mail.
It's a beautiful trophy, 100% solid, gold tinted plastic.
So, Bastille featuring Greats. Directed by Keith Schofield. And Adam, since this is what you picked, tell us what goes on.
So this video is called Torn Apart by Bastille, who's an artist that's come up quite a bit on this podcast. We were talking to Austin Peters a few episodes ago, who did the Oblivion video with Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones.
And he also did the
Laura Palmer video, right?
Video for them as well,
and the Flaws as well.
Flaws.
So this is Torn Apart. Keith Schofield. If you guys are familiar with Keith Schofield, he has done some. I think some of my list of like the most clever music videos of some of the last few years. Clever in kind of taking a concept that either turn something upside down or you kind of like slap your head and say, why didn't I think of that? One of those is the You Can't Be My Girl by Darwin D's video from 2013, which is made up entirely of stock video that Darwin D's is inserted into, which is, you know, something that could be a really one note video in the hands of somebody less talented than Keith Schofield. But this video is one that starts off as something that where you're like immediately you're kind of conditioned to know what kind of video this is. It's one of those videos that has a message, and that's something that music videos in the last few years have really gotten into. I think I remember that one with the girl with the makeup, and anyway, there's a lot of those. And it kind of starts out by really quickly telling you, I can't remember what it says, but it kind of indicates that here's a message about how everybody is, you know, we're all people underneath.
Love is love.
Love is love, exactly, which is, you know, obviously a great message, and there are great music videos that that make that point. But you're kind of like, okay, this is the ride I'm in for. And the concept is these couple, and they are morphing into different people. And then you kind of, your brain kind of catches up and it says, okay, well, we're going to be shown different kind of different couples and different people. And, you know, maybe it'll be, you know, two good looking people to, you know, all these different kinds of people. And then suddenly things start to look a little different. There's some odd looking people. And then you kind of have to watch the video to see what happens next. Keith Schofield takes it to a really interesting place.
The easiest way to describe it, is it goes in a very Keith Schofield direction.
Exactly.
That's and that's because it's just like, it just gets insane. It becomes aliens and like people with their genitals on their stomachs and multiple genitals. And I'm surprised I forgot to put the Vimeo embed up. There's a moment that's censored on Vevo and it's uncensored on Vimeo.
No, it's not. Oh, God.
And more explicit, obviously. And so I'll save that. That's not something I'll describe. But anyone who's seen the video probably knows the moment we're talking about. So yes, things get very insane, and then they go. I love that they go back to the people looking in the camera talking, and then they just start saying just like it almost becomes gibberish. Some guys like talking about like something about a toaster, and it just gets very very strange. And then the morphing goes haywire too, right? Like arms become legs, and stomachs become butts and all of that, and the bodies start morphing as well. And I think, you know, like I mentioned, it's anyone who's familiar with Keith Schofield's work, another famous Keith Schofield music video would be Big Bad Wolf by Duck Sauce. Anyone who knows about that video, it's a video of people with heads for genitals. A lot of genital stocks in Keith Schofield's videos.
My favorite quote from the video is, "Love is a porta potty filled with hope and happiness."
It's not a lie.
What was I going to say? And it's odd because Bastille, even though they've done some, their videos are more on the serious side, is what I'm saying.
Typically, right.
Typically, even like Oblivion, which has a little bit of an air of kind of like fun to it, is very serious. And Keith Schofield kind of keeps in the same like a serious color palette, which I think is really brilliant. It's not like a fun, colorful video that is supposed to be wacky. So Brian and Carl, were you guys? Did you guys know that this was a kind of like a comedic video going into it? This is one of those things where I had no clue until it actually started.
Yeah, no, that's kind of beauty. Like, I was actually cringing at first because it kind of has that sort of Michael Jackson black and white, sort of very earnest Hallmark sentiment. And I like that he never breaks out of that kind of generic sort of format. He just takes the content to the most horrible extreme possible just totally straight faced. It's sort of unaware of how sort of grotesque and absurd it is. I would love to have been a fly on the wall during the casting sort of thing.
there is some strange, they're not Eric Wareheim ham level strange people, but there are some very like not traditional music video people in this video, and then suddenly there's also just like a fighting dummy too gets in on the action, which is
a massive dildo.
it's great. And anyone who's listening to this podcast now will be able to see what goes on behind the blur, because we have the uncensored version up on the site. So great news for us.
Did anybody else catch the intro to this? It's almost kind of like trying to fake you out a little bit because it starts so quickly. Like in the first second, it's like, okay, here's the message and here we go.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely a red herring. Is that what they're called?
Yeah. I think so.
Listen, look at me. I think that's what it is. I think, he's trying to fool you. Cause the first kind of people are like kind of traditionally attractive.
It uses the language of these, of a kind of video. If you were making this kind of video, this is the same language you would use, sort of like a washed out tone. Everybody's in, you know, really form fitting, you know, like beige and gray underwear kind of dealio, but nothing too revealing.
But it's almost like the ad that runs before the YouTube clips these days. You think you're watching like this is like L'Oreal or Carol or something, and it's like, oh fuck, this is the video, you know.
I love that they're all in the same outfit though, regardless of how like the bodies change. Like there's like a big fat dude, he's still got the same gray underwear on, and they do like the same motions, you know, like the actions repeat a lot. It's like a choreographed dance type video, and the stuff, you know, the actions repeat and the objects in the room change too. So like the first guy walks and he like throws a picture frame on the ground, and then like the dude with the long red hair, and he like throws like a jar of candy beans or gumballs or something on the ground. It's just those like little subtle changes that also just like they make sense but don't. It's a weird way to describe it, but it's true. So this is a fun one. That was a fun video.
And it's done pretty well, I think. We should go over just a little bit of what the most popular music videos of the week are going to be. Because we talked about him by... pronounce his name for me, Adam?
Mr. Wazo.
Mr. Wazo. Thank you. I was not going to get that at all. But we got a Gwen Stefani at the top video at the top, Spark the Fire, directed by Sophie Muller. Ham is second. All I Want for Christmas Is You by Fifth Harmony, directed by Nigel Dick, of all people. A Christmas song is coming at number three. We got a Travis Scott song, Mamacita, directed by Grant Singer, who's directed a lot of Amazing Sky Ferreira videos, at four. And then at five, Can't Stop Dancing by Becky G, directed by another person who has been on this podcast, Hannah Lux Davis.
And you know, Grant Singer was too. Eric Wareheim is going to fall off the list because that came out Friday of last week.
That's right. That'll be pushed off tomorrow.
So that means Straight No Chaser, Text Me Merry Christmas, featuring Kristen Bell from Veronica Mars.
A video which I have actively avoided all week.
Yeah, to continue to do that. And that'll do it, right?
That will. And we have not talked about those videos, but if you want to see them, you can go to imvdb.com/charts. I don't know if you knew this, you guys, but you can see all of the new music videos and which ones are the top ones on that page. And if just like if you go to imvdb.com/picks, you can see all of our favorite picks for new music videos. And if you want to see the videos that we have talked about, including the links, we'll put in links to... like Bill Viola and a few other links that we talked about, including the short film Squirrel, will all be in the show notes. And you can find those by going to imvdb.com/podcast. And we've got to 134 episodes. This is episode 134. And there you'll find the links. You'll find the videos. And you'll also find a link to the page for Brian and Carl on IMVDB. Which has a link to... Are you guys on Twitter? We have a website link for you guys.
Yeah, we've got our separate Twitters. We need to kind of get maybe a Brian and Carl one.
We have a joint bank account, but we don't have a joint Twitter.
That's what I was wondering if you guys had gone all the way to the joint Twitter account. That's a huge...
Yeah.
I think we'll have to discuss whether we're ready for that.
bank accounts, nothing, but... Twitter account. That's a serious commitment.
Because like I think because Lamar and Nick have one Twitter account, but like Brother has a Twitter account to jointly, but they also like Alex Lee, a Brother, also has his own Twitter account.
Yeah, it's weird. It's mixy because it's weird. Lamar and Nick, though, for anyone who's wondering, I'm pretty sure it's just Nick.
I'm probably yeah. Lamar, he doesn't do shit.
shit, that's terrible.
and if you want to actually, weirdly enough, in the last few weeks we've heard of people kind of, I don't know if it's if it's the holidays coming up and you have time, if you want to, all those episodes are still up there, you can binge listen to them. Adam Alexander has been binge, he was not on this podcast until episode 75, so Adam, would you recommend the early episodes? There's some good interviews on there.
Yes, binge from episode one on.
Oh no, I can't. I cannot support doing that.
I fully support it. There's some hilarious stuff, and I mean, you know, you guys were new at it and stuff, but like, it's still awesome. Like all the guests are wicked. I'm loving it. I'm
You guys sucked at asking questions. It's something that we haven't gotten over.
I think that I think we did. Brian and Carl, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
That's awesome.
And thank you for staying up to ridiculously late hours, early hours in London.
It's all right. It's nearly 5 o'clock. We'll just push through, like, into bed.
just head out. Yeah, get off the podcast and head out and go get some breakfast and then just start your day. I'm sure you'll feel refreshed and ready.